protesting not at all when it was generally agreed that the collapse of certain squalid brick houses in the Red Hook section of Brooklyn and the consequent death of many brave officers had unseated his nervous equilibrium. He had worked too hard, all said, in trying to clean up those nests of disorder and violence. Certain features were shocking enough, in all conscience, and the unexpected tragedy was the last straw. This was a simple explanation which everyone could understand, and because Malone was not a simple person, he perceived that he had better let it suffice. To hint to unimaginative people of a horror beyond all human conception, a horror of houses and blocks and cities, leprous and cancerous with evil dragged from elder worlds, would be merely to invite a padded cell, instead of restful rustication. And Malone was a man of sense, despite his mysticism. He had the Celt's far vision of weird and hidden things, but the logician's quick eye for the outwardly unconvincing, an amalgam which had led him far afield in the 42 years of his life, and set him in strange places for a Dublin University man born in a Georgian villa near Phoenix Park. As he reviewed the things he had seen and felt and apprehended, Malone was content to keep unshared the secret of what could reduce a dauntless fighter to a quivering neurotic. What could make old brick slums and seas of dark, subtle faces a thing of nightmare and eldritch portent? It would not be the first time his sensations had been forced to bide uninterpreted. Or was not his very act of plunging into the polyglot abyss of New York's underworld a freak beyond sensible explanation? What could he tell the prosaic of the antique witcheries and grotesque marvels discernible to sensitive eyes amidst the poisoned cauldron where all the very dregs of unwholesome ages mix the venom and perpetuate their obscene terrors? He had seen the hellish green flame of secret wonder in this blatant, evasive welter of outward greed and inward blasphemy, and had smiled gently when all the New Yorkers he knew scoffed at his experiment in police work. They had been very witty and cynical, deriding his fantastic pursuit of unknowable mysteries, and assuring him that in these days New York held nothing but cheapness and vulgarity. One of them had wagered him a heavy sum that he could not, despite many poignant things to his credit in the Dublin Review, even write a truly interesting story of New York lowlife. And now, looking back, he perceived that cosmic irony had justified the prophet's words, while secretly confuting their flippant meaning. The horror, as glimpsed at last, could not make a story. For like the book cited by Poe's German authority, Erlost sich nicht lesen, it does not permit itself to be read. The Horror at Red Hook by H.P. Lovecraft. Chapter 2. To Malone, the sense of latent mystery in existence was always present. In youth, he had felt the hidden beauty and ecstasy of things and had been a poet. But poverty and a sorrow and exile had turned his gaze in darker directions, and he had thrilled at the imputations of evil in the world around. Daily life had for him come to be a phantasmagoria of macabre shadow studies, now glittering and leering with concealed rottenness, as in Beardsley's best manner, now hinting terrors behind the commonest shapes and objects, as in the subtler and less obvious work of Gustav Dore. He would often regard it as merciful that most persons of high intelligence jeer at the inmost mysteries, for he argued, if superior minds were ever placed in fullest contact with the secrets preserved by ancient and lowly cults, the resultant abnormalities would soon not only wreck the world, but threaten the very integrity of the universe. All this reflection was no doubt morbid, but keen logic and a deep sense of humor ably offset it. Malone was satisfied to let his notions remain as half-spied and forbidden visions to be lightly played with,